Our guest today, the president and CEO of Epilepsy Prelid, now EPI, Jeff Sinzenbach. Now, Jeff, let's start with the first question. I'm familiar with Epilepsy Prelid. Why the change in name?
Well, we've been around for a while. Our name was very confusing. Kind of the history of where we come from, we were two separate agencies. We were an agency called Prelid, People Rebuilding and Living in Dignity, and an agency called the Epilepsy Foundation of Rochester, Syracuse, and Binghamton. When the two agencies merged in 2013, we put a temporary placeholder name on there, which is Epilepsy Prelid, Inc., and we said, well, we'll get back to that when we figure out what we're going to do. Well, here it is 7 or 8 years later, and we're just, we came back around to it. So the new name, which we're keeping the initials EPI, but we went with Empowering Persons Independence, People's okay. Independence. And the reason for doing that is it really tells you who we are and what we do. It also... it's something a little different that it was really hard to explain what Epilepsy Prelid was because of the legacy two agencies. They're like, do you just serve people with epilepsy? No, we serve people that have developmental disabilities and brain injuries and some mental health concerns. So it was a little bit limiting in what we do. Although epilepsy is a specialized population we serve, it isn't the whole story of what it was. And Prelid, the old agency name, was an acronym for People Rebuilding and Living in Dignity, but it was a really long name,
Yeah. And
it was hard for people to remember, and Prelid's sort of a word like Kodak or Xerox. It didn't really mean anything, so
Right. It
just seemed like it was time to do a rebrand and refresh, and in the pandemic, there seemed to be enough time for us to sit down and finally have that conversation. So,
well, it had to be well thought out if it took 7 years, right?
Yes.
I've seen the you've already got a billboard up right at the Can of Worms,
if we
still call it the Can of Worms.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see your point, though. When you hear Epilepsy Prelid, you're automatically going straight to epilepsy.
Right.
But you guys do so much more. Now, you cover, is it all of Western New York?
Yeah, so we serve people in probably about 30 different counties. We have offices. We have an office in Binghamton, an office in Syracuse. We currently have two offices in Rochester, but we serve people pretty much in any county in Western and Central New York.
Gotcha. And numbers, of adults and children that are under your umbrella. I mean, how many people are you servicing here?
It's close to 7,000 people, both children and adults. We really will serve individuals of any age, and about 7,000 people. Some of the people we serve, it's one-time touch in their lifetime, and some of the people we serve, it's 24/7 care 365 days a year.
You have residential locations, too?
Yes. So one of the populations we serve, individuals with developmental disabilities, we have 12 residences. Two of them are in the Binghamton area, and the other 10 are in the Rochester area.
Gotcha. And I see there's over 950 employees under you.
Yeah, we've really been expanding a lot. At the point of merger in 2013, I think we had about 250 employees. So in the last 8 years, we've gained 700 employees. The biggest gains in employees have come in our self-directed services where individuals are really in control. They hire the staff, they choose what they do, they make the plan. So as opposed to a traditional or a brick-and-mortar program where people would come to you and basically get what you have to offer, here people are driving and choosing the plan and the service and where it happens and who their staff are and how it plays out.
How do they come to you? Who's recommending you sending you the clients?
So we get referrals from a number of places. We get referrals from state entities. They'll send us referrals. Other similar community-based organizations like ourselves will send referrals to us. And sometimes people find us themselves, a family member or on the internet or something. They'll find our website and come to us that way. So it's really a kind of a wide variety of places.
Now, epilepsy, how did you come to be a part of this? I think it's in your history, right? I was reading your bio here.
So I got in this field on accident. I thought I was going to be a social studies teacher. That's what I went to school for.
Okay.
And when I was doing my student teaching, I started working in a group home at another agency in town and did that. And when I got done with that, I needed health insurance. So I took a full-time job in a day program working with people with developmental disabilities. And work started as a direct service provider and kind of worked my way up. And in 2015, when the opportunity to come to this agency occurred, I jumped on it. So I like to tell people that, I got in this field by accident, but I stay on purpose. But I have personal connections to epilepsy in my family and developmental disabilities. So it's an area that I knew a little bit about as a family member and kind of bring all that experience into the role that I'm in.
Now, there's a number of organizations in town that kind of do the same work.
Yeah.
What would differentiate? What would you say would differentiate you from? Or is it's just the need is there because there's so many people?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a little of both. I think that, the funding and the dollars come the same way. One of the programs, we have group homes and we have day programs and those things. And the funding comes from the same place. And there are a number of agencies that do it. I think that it's really about the style and the approach in how you address it. Some organizations work on volume. They large numbers of people, that kind of thing. I think for us, it's really about the organization needs to be able to treat every single person as a unique individual, and that our job is to help empower people with as much choice, with services that are as individualized as possible that they can work with, and really let them drive and go where they can go. So I think, we all use a lot of the same language, but it plays out at different organizations. Some are a little more traditional and more caretaking, and we're more driven to help people explore their fullest potential and really chase it down.
Well, what I've been reading is you guys are taking a more innovative approach, would you say?
Yeah, I think that, you think about like the pandemic and things that no one could have predicted a few years ago.
Exactly.
But if you're looking in the arena that we serve, the people that get served that have highest infection rates live in brick and mortar settings or attend congregate day settings and other things. And when you're looking at customizing solutions for people, it's administratively, it's a lot harder to run as an organization, but it's cheaper to the taxpayer. People are happier with the outcomes. And the outcomes lead to even better healthcare kinds of outcomes over time. So it's really about just kind of looking at unmet needs and trying to find a solution to it. So an example in our epilepsy services, we noticed struggling with individuals who were teenagers that were transitioning into adulthood. And so in partnership with some fantastic doctors at the U of R, we created a teen weekend program where we let teens come to us, spend time with us. We make it fun and interesting, but we do training and prep for those life changes of adulthood. And then on the back end, we have their parents come in and have a conversation. They get to sit down with a neurologist and talk about what they need to know and answer questions. So it's an example of here's a very specific need, and then we custom created a program to address that need.
That's crazy. That's cool. You did mention the taxpayers. Now, we've been hearing the governor on TV and on the radio every day talking about the shortfall of the budget. Are you anticipating any cutbacks?
Yes. So it was looking before the election. It was looking even darker than it is. But the state of New York has a Medicaid's one of our largest vehicles for payment for our services, and the state of New York's looking at a $15 billion gap to address. And so, if the federal government doesn't help bail out the state in this arena, then there'll be really draconian cuts across the services that we're looking at. It's because of how the election worked out. It's looking a little more optimistic, but there's no way that they can't. They have to spend less money on what we're doing. And again, it's part of what we want to do is be a part of that solution long term. How do we take care of the people in the way that they're used to and the way that they want to be, but still find cost-effective solutions to help people live a good life, in the future. And I spend a lot of time thinking about what is this system going to look like 5 years or 10 years or 20 years from now. And I think the pandemic really shined a spotlight on that.
Yeah, and I know in the past I've actually hosted a couple of your fundraisers. What is there anything in the future going down? I mean, you guys have done all sorts of fun events. I know that.
Yeah. So our biggest fundraising event that we do in the year is the Chocolate Ball, and a lot of people in this town have heard of the Chocolate Ball and like it. Well, it's scheduled to be, actually it would have been this Saturday.
Sure.
But obviously we couldn't do that. So what it's looking like we're going to do now is probably either a TV show or a telethon or something like that, and it will be coming up. We haven't announced the date yet, but probably in May is when we're looking to do that. And that's really important because a lot of the services we provide for epilepsy are reliant on donor dollars to make those programs happen. So we're doing that. And then last year we did a virtual 20 miles in 20 days fundraiser for the agency.
Those virtual runs, they're fun.
and that was a lot of fun, and we had a great response from it. So I'm thinking that we might do something like that as well. And we're just kind of paying attention like everyone else is how do we hold an event? How do we raise awareness in an environment where people can't get together? So we're spending a lot of time trying to think of other solutions now.
Well, especially now we have a new name that you have to brand too.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So that's going to be a quite a challenge as well. I know also under the umbrella is brain injury. So do you ever deal with any veterans or anything like that?
Yes, not a ton. One of the things in the in the Gulf War vets, and there was a lot of issues of PTSD and brain injury. We really started to look at different partnering options in the community and service options. But what we found is a lot of those returning soldiers didn't want to be part of
I've heard that
service
before.
System. And honestly, it's still the Vietnam vets that are getting a lot of services. So in our brain injury services, we do have a few military vets and a few former police officers that were injured in the line of duty, but it's not the primary people that have come to us.
So with the employees, almost 1,000 employees, what can people do to help EPI, Epilepsy Prelude, other than obviously money, but is there any like volunteer situations or anything like that they can help with?
Yeah, well, there's always a great call for volunteer help. We're always looking for board members, possible board members for future time, committee members to help us work on different things, and just even volunteers to maybe past COVID, but when to come in and share their skills and strengths with the people that we provide service to. We've had people that come and musicians that do things and artists that will come and run a class and do those things. So we're always looking for ways that people can help and contribute. And then probably the biggest volunteer opportunity we have is in August every year we run a camp, an overnight camp for children with epilepsy. And that camp would not happen without volunteers. We have about 30 volunteers that come spend a week with us at a YMCA camp in the Buffalo area and live right there with the campers and help do things and those things. So we're always looking for people to help with that camp as well.
That actually sounds like fun.
Yeah. Well, the people that do it come back every year.
Sure.
It's funny is we don't have a hard time keeping volunteers when they come to us. So.
Okay, Jeff. Now, how do we reach out? How does somebody get a hold of you? I know with the name change and stuff like that, I want people to be able to find you if they want to get in touch or give you some money.
Yeah. So here's the beautiful thing is by keeping the initials EPI, we kept our old website. So it's epiny.org. And our office phone number is 442-6420. And again, just you can look up empowering persons or empowering people's independence. You can look that up or send an email. You could send one to me if you want, jsinzebach@epiny.org as well.
Jeff Sinzebach, president and CEO of EPI, formerly Epilepsy Prelude. Once again, epiny.org is the best way to find out more. And I appreciate your time today.
Okay, thank you so much, Dino.